Now that DeAndre Ayton is officially back with the Phoenix Suns, on today's episode of Locked On Suns, I'll tell you three ways that DeAndre Ayton can continue to improve and be even better in 2023.
You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Back. This is Locked On Phoenix Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I'm your host, Brendan Kleen, a credentialed media member covering the Suns for the past five seasons and a writer at Suns.com and Dime Magazine. A big thank you for making Locked On Suns your first listen today and every day. If you're finding us on your favorite podcast platform, go ahead and hit follow or subscribe. Make sure you don't miss this show in your feed every day. And if you're finding us on YouTube, that's the best way to support the show. Go ahead and hit subscribe down below and tell me what you think is the biggest area of growth that you want to see from DeAndre Ayton in 2023. I have three for you. We'll get them started shortly. Another reminder, everybody, to go ahead and follow on Twitter if you don't already, at LockedOnPHXSuns, or my personal feed is at BrendanKleen14. It's not exactly news that DeAndre Ayton needs to get better as a shot creator. That has been the knock on him for as long as he's been in our basketball universe. If you were watching him in high school, I'm sure you might have said the same thing. And at U of A, it was the same. And in the NBA, it has been the same. It's a big part of why Monty Williams refocused him, along with some guidance from assistant coach Mark Bryant, on, hey, you are going to be a pick-and-roll player. You are going to learn the fundamentals of that, get great at it, and then we'll see what happens. He has gotten great at that, which we'll go over later, but the dribbling is the first real stepping stone. And unfortunately, I just think, if we're being honest here, it hasn't gotten that much better. The frequency, there's different ways to slice it. NBA.com has stats of how many of his shots came after one dribble versus two dribbles versus three to six dribbles. And the numbers are sort of all over the place. They don't really paint the picture of a player who has gotten more comfortable handling the ball and taking shots that way. It just doesn't. There's no real positive way to slice that. However, you know, on the shots where he took two dribbles, it was a little bit up on the frequency and his efficiency was way up at 59%. So maybe that counts to you as progress. We certainly saw moments in the Pelicans series, especially where he was putting the ball on the ground, getting to that hook shot, which has become a real weapon for him. Really usually a one dribble shot, but nevertheless, that can be a building block. It has to be. You can't have a player who wants more responsibility on offense and is being paid like a player who deserves that responsibility. If that player can't put the ball on the ground at least a little bit, it's just not going to result in positive outcomes. The best offensive centers in the NBA, whether that's Towns, Jokic, Embiid, whomever you want to pick, even Bam Adebayo, those guys can handle the ball. Some better than others. I'm not expecting Ayton to become Joel Embiid, taking pull-up threes and all that, but it needs to be better. Post-ups. This is an easy one, and I think it's, again, not going to be new territory, but I think it's worth looking at the numbers a little bit closer, starting with the fact that I think we underestimate how many post-ups Ayton actually gets. It's somewhere between 3 and 4 post-up possessions per game, and that might sound like a little number, and it kind of is, obviously, just at face value. But in 2020-21, the first finals season, the first Chris Paul season, let's call it that, Ayton had the 14th most post-up possessions in the league. In last season, he had the 12th most. It went up. And not only did the frequency go up there, but he was in the bottom half of the NBA in terms of efficiency in those situations last season. This most recent season, he was up to the 76th percentile. So his frequency went up and his efficiency went up. I don't think we talk about it in that way. We talk about him like he never gets those opportunities. Now, 3 to 4 is not a lot of them, but it's more than most players get, is really the bottom line. There just aren't a lot of NBA players these days who get to go into the post at all. I think a little bit more than that might be reasonable, but I don't think it's, unless he takes gigantic strides forward, I don't really think that's going to be the place that he settles in. Even with that said, though, only one player across the past two seasons has had a lower free throw rate in the post than Ayton, and it's Nikola Vucevic, which is something that I don't know if I had ever really thought about in that much detail, but it's kind of incredible. Ayton never draws free throws, and yet there's an all-star caliber player who somehow draws even fewer of them, which is crazy. Vucevic, obviously a much better three-point shooter, though, which we'll get to in a second. I think you look at this with the post-ups, the dribbling, all that stuff, and you... I think that the damage is still going to come in the pick and roll, primarily for Ayton, but more of that short roll stuff, I think, is what you're going to see. You started to see some moments in the playoffs at the, you know, by the end of the regular season where Ayton looked straight up Stoudemire-like, right? One dribble into a dunk, or, you know, one dribble, meet the defense where it is, spin move hook shot, or, you know, spin move layup. Those types of things are pretty darn impressive, and that's going to be where a lot of his damage is. You have to be the level, the threshold to be a genuine guy who gets fed in the post in the way that maybe Ayton's, you know, childhood dreams would have wanted him to be. The threshold to be good enough for that in today's NBA is just so incredibly high, and Ayton just, it's very hard to imagine that he meets that. But some other things here that can help him balance out his game, get some more of the opportunities that I think he wants, and just make his overall game a little bit more efficient. So this past season is weird in a lot of ways. There's a lot of trends that even prior to Monty Williams, you can kind of watch through Ayton's career. And then last season comes along and it's completely wonky. For instance, and we'll get to a couple of them throughout the show, but in this particular case, when it comes to his offense, it's at-rim frequency. It plummeted to just 42% of his shot attempts this season. Very, very strange. He had been 54, 52, 61%. Over half, if not even higher than that, of his shots were coming at the rim. Until this past season, dropped to 42%. Way less than half of his shot attempts came at the rim this year. And mostly he exchanged those for mid-range shots. So you might look at that and say, well, hey, he is getting some more opportunities to do a little more on offense. And I would probably agree with you. I think that's been under-discussed as well. But at the same time, you look and his efficiency at the rim went even higher, 77%, which is insane and incredibly valuable. But he also shot 56% for mid-range. So I kind of feel like maybe you balance that out a little bit and you're kind of cooking. You know, like maybe he gets a little better on some of that short roll stuff, getting to the basket. Maybe it's one dribble into those dunks, the things I was just talking about, the Stoudemire stuff, while keeping, you know, he went up from 36% of his shots in the mid range last season to 55% this season. Maybe you split the difference. Maybe it's a little less than half, but if he's still making 50%+ of those, that's still a really valuable shot. Guys like LaMarcus Aldridge, Karl Malone, whatever era you want to go to, if you're making that shot at a high level and you're big enough to get it off over just about anybody, it can be a valuable shot no matter your era. So I think that should continue. The shooting stuff brings us to the last point here of how he needs to improve his offensive game, and it's shooting. He's a career 75% three-point shooter. The threes have gotten more confident. There's more arc underneath of them, quicker release as time has progressed. He just has to shoot them, and it can't be a couple at a time in back-to-back games and we all get excited. It's been 4 years. If it's something that he can do, then he should be doing it. He has the freedom, clearly. And you think, like, even a guy like JaVale McGee was able to put all of the Shaqt and a Fool nonsense, the low-light reels that he was a part of with the goofiness of his game, and even he has been able to feel the comfort of just launching threes to keep the defense honest when it makes sense to do so. there's no reason DeAndre Ayton can't do the same. So I don't think that's the key point. I don't think he's going to become Nikola Jokic out there. I don't think he's going to become Karl Anthony Towns out there and just be bombing threes. But it is an ability that he has. And if he's being paid like an elite player, then he needs to be using all the aspects of his game. And I think that would be something that could help balance it out. Next, let's go back. Back to last year's NBA Finals and discuss the next part of DeAndre Ayton's game that he should build on this coming season. But first, today's show, guys, brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline.net has all of your sports odds, news, and analysis all year long. We just got done with the Open Championship in golf, the last major for a while. We still have, what is it, the U.S. Open is coming up in tennis. And then, of course, the baseball regular season. The football seasons are not too far away. Combat sports always going on. And look, there's already basketball futures as well. It never really slows down. We know that. Suns fans are still completely in waiting on the Kevin Durant stuff. There's futures odds for all of that. But I'm already looking forward to the start of the Premier League season. My Chelsea are playing Everton on August 6th at 9:30. Wow, I don't even have to wake up early. Chelsea are favored by 1. The over-under for the game is 2.5. You can bet Everton for plus 400. I might be a little angry at you, but you can do it. And there's tons of soccer stuff, honestly. World Cup I've told you guys about before, so bet online. If there's a sport you want to bet on, if there's a sport you want to know more about, they have you covered. So head to Bet Online today or use their mobile app to learn more about the latest trends and action. Bet Online, where the game starts. Okay, we talked about offensive creation. Now we're going to talk about defensive versatility. Part two of how Ayton can improve this upcoming season now that he has his max contract. He has the stability and security that he has coveted for so long. I think you have to start out by acknowledging the awkward elephant in the room that doesn't really tell the full story, but after four seasons, it's kind of needs to at least be acknowledged, is that the Suns' defense historically has been better with Ayton off the floor. Even when you look at other starters like Mikal Bridges and Chris Paul in particular, those guys' on-off ratings on defense show when they're out there, the defense is better. And yet Ayton, you would think, okay, well, yeah, the Suns' bench has been good the past 2 years, so them beating up on other benches is going to skew the numbers. Okay, well, that doesn't quite explain Paul or Bridges, who have had a nice impact show up in the stats. So there's a documented history now of this where Ayton being out there doesn't always equate with strong defensive efficiency from the Suns. I don't buy that entirely. I think he's a really good, if not verging on great defender, but I do think one area where he could get better just in terms of tapping into his own athletic ability and talent and skill is to be more versatile. You can watch and know that he's been more versatile and switchable under Monty as his second, third, and fourth seasons have progressed, especially the past 2 years, I would say. But he still guards bigs about three quarters of the time. B-Ball Index tracks this stuff, and you know, between fours and fives, Ayton is guarding those guys about three quarters of the time. He's guarding, you know, wings and guards a quarter. It's not a lot. His defensive versatility score, according to B-Ball Index, is close to guys who we would strongly think of as one-position defenders. Mike Conley, who's very tiny. Cody Zeller, who's very ground-bound and not very tall. I guess he's pretty tall. And then LaMarcus Aldridge, but more recent LaMarcus Aldridge, to be clear. The Spurs-era guy who, you know, maybe he's going to stop you at the rim, but that's about it. He's not keeping up with you off the dribble whatsoever. So that's who he gets compared to with this scoring metric. And I don't think that that's the default thing we should go with, but it certainly paints a picture of a player who's far less versatile than we kind of think of him as being. The numbers within B-Ball Index also tell us that he's in the 32nd percentile as an on-ball perimeter defender. You know, he guards ball handlers specifically more often than some big men do, but not really, you know, wings or forwards. He's not guarding Jason Tatum's, for example, Jaylen Brown's. He guards, maybe he'll get you a point guard off of a pick and roll in a switch, but, you know, other than that, it's pretty much not going to happen. It's going to be a center. And even when he does it, 32nd percentile shows that it's not making a big impact. I kind of think the numbers start to paint a picture where he's capable, but doesn't do anything to stop the opposing team in those spots. It's like, does he get embarrassed? Does he end up with his ankles broken? No, but he doesn't. He's not going to slow somebody down like a, you know, Bam Adebayo, Draymond Green, the very Jaren Jackson, the elite of the elite switchable big men. Ayton doesn't belong in that class right now. And I think he has the ability to get better. Is he going to ever be as good as Draymond Green? I don't think so. One is he's, you know, basically 7 feet tall, whereas Draymond is significantly smaller than that. That helps. But we came away from the 2021 finals with this narrative that I never fully bought. I think it was obvious the Suns needed a center, a better backup center because of the fouls. That, you know, you just want to have your centers be able to use up their fouls. You want to have Ayton feeling fresh. The minutes he was playing in the conference finals and finals at times was a lot. But this idea that, like, without a backup, he wasn't going to be able to guard Giannis as well as he could because he was nervous about fouling or whatever the case might have been, depending on who was making that argument, I didn't ever feel like that made a lot of sense. I don't think he could guard Giannis because he couldn't guard Giannis. I don't think that if he felt better about using his fouls that somehow that would have changed his approach and made him be able to keep Giannis quiet and the Suns win that series. Like, that feels very far-fetched to me. So he can get better. Is he going to stop Giannis? No, nobody can stop Giannis. But I think he can live up to that expectation that we kind of all manifested for him by, you know, maybe it is a little bit on Monty to trust a switch a little bit more and allow Ayton to get better there as he ages, now that he is a little bit more of a disciplined defender. And that brings me to the interior defense. He basically is a guy, you know, again, leaning on some of these B-ball index scores because they do a good job of separating out components of offense or defense. What we kind of can see coming away from that is Ayton dominates these middling, low-usage, run-of-the-mill type of centers. Not bad players, but if you are a, I don't know, who's a Jakob Poeltl, right? Or if you're a Cody Zeller, who I just mentioned, or if you're a, I don't mean to just to just name white players by any means. Let's say Andre Drummond, Nick Claxton, those Nets players, or throw anybody out there, Kevon Looney. Ayton can really play well against those guys. He's a 70 in the 72nd percentile in post defense. He's a great, good to great. I don't want to, you know, he's not a, maybe elite Rudy Gobert type, but a very good rim contester and rim protector. And so that part of his game is developed. And I think maybe Monty can and should start to experiment a little bit more defensively. I've always felt like what makes Ayton really special on defense is that he can do a lot of things. He can switch. He can hedge and get it, move his feet and, you know, kind of get in the ball handler's way a little bit and recover. He can blitz, I think. He doesn't do it very often, but I think he could. He's nimble enough. And so I think Monty could benefit from mixing things up. Our lasting memory defensively of that Mav series was the team just giving up switches. And I think Ayton did actually a pretty good job against Luka in those spots, but it wasn't often Ayton who was getting those. And being able to switch up coverage and not have the offense dictate that, I think would help. And I think it would help Ayton to make some of those mistakes, get better, be able to learn. And I think he has the ability to grow into that. So this is one where I think the growth could be pretty natural. It just is going to be a matter of getting uncomfortable a little bit, maybe sacrificing not being the best of the best of the best on defense every night, but over the course of the season, we've seen this from a lot of teams, the Bucks, the Jazz, who do have these drop centers like Brook Lopez or Rudy Gobert. They've used the regular season to experiment a little bit, and they've been better off for it. So I think the Suns should do the same, and Ayton could really be a beneficiary. Next, it's not the prettiest part of the game, but DeAndre Ayton needs to make a more consistent impact as a rebounder. I'll explain why next, but first, let's take a quick break. Let's hit the stats here on the glass before we dive into Ayton in particular and what it means for this team. So last season, for the first time, again, I was talking about some of these wonky stats that have cropped up last year for Ayton that don't really have any rhyme or reason compared to the first 3 years of his career, and this is another one. Teams dominated the Suns on the glass when Ayton was on the floor last year, which had never really happened. And then you look at the playoffs and his total rebounding percentage, which is just straight up what proportion of opponent misses did Ayton grab as rebounds. And that number had plummeted to 17.4%, which was not only lower than the previous playoffs, but lower than any regular season of his career. Four entire percentage points lower than JaVale McGee, for example, as well. To continue to describe how ugly it kind of got last year with this, Luka's rebounding rate in the second round was almost the same as that 17.4% that Ayton had. So if Luka Doncic is rebounding almost as well as you and you're a 7-foot center getting paid a max, it can't happen, right? But there's reason for optimism, and this is part of why I'm going to hammer it home today. Against the Clippers, to pick another playoff series that was kind of the polar opposite, Ayton had what I would say is the best stretch of rebounding of his entire career. His rebounding rate was 20% even. A fifth of opponent misses, Ayton himself was grabbing. That's not the team's rebounding rate when he's on the floor. That's just him. One out of every five loose balls off of misses by the Clippers last year, he was directly rebounding. He had 13.7 rebounds per game. And then, of course, the game that I mentioned yesterday that I reference a lot of the 2020 game in game four against the Clippers, which was probably one of the most impactful games of his career. That was the game where it was like 86-82 final score. Nobody could make a shot, and the Suns needed that one coming off of the Valley-oop and then the Clippers winning game three. So we've seen these moments where his rebounding has not only been great, but made a genuine impact. And that's, I think, can happen every night. I mean, is it worth it in every regular season game if you're dominating the, you know, Pistons in a random game in January or February? Of course not. But he can make this into a real strength for him, and as a result of that, a real strength for the team. The team is the next part of this, right? The roster differences this year. His backups without JaVale McGee are going to be worse rebounders. Biombo's undersized, even if he does play with good energy. He's one of those guys where you feel him, you know, you feel like he's getting the loose balls, you feel like he's getting his hands on rebounds, and then you look up and he had like three in the game. Dario Saric will be back. He is a fine rebounder, but he's an undersized five as well, and, you know, not an elite athlete. He'll also be coming off of injury. And then Jock Landale is really big, but like Saric, is a pick-and-pop player who's not a great athlete and has not really rebounded much at all in the NBA last year, even though he has in the Australian League. So maybe that one could help, but none of these guys are going to be at the level of JaVale McGee as rebounders. Also here, you're gonna get tired of me having to do the with KD, without KD thing, but it's just the reality right now. But either way, kind of, Bridges and Johnson have never been great rebounders. Crowder is solid but undersized. I mean, if it's a run-it-back type of situation to start the season, we know that rebounding is a weakness for the Suns. Even with Ayton at his best, it can still be a problem. So Ayton getting better there would make it less of a weakness. That is pretty obvious. But even with Kevin Durant, I think he's underrated as a rebounder just by being 7 feet tall. But you also have to factor in, you might be losing maybe Bridges and Johnson. And maybe then your backup might be, I mean, I don't know. Is your backup going to be, you know, Ish Wainwright? I mean, he has the potential to be a pretty good rebounder, but he's just a worse overall player. Like, you would like to feel like the rebounding, the physicality, all that stuff can just be a tone that's set by your best player. It's an easy way for Ayton to lead by example on this team, to kind of exert his influence on the game, provide a reliable something to his teammates. And I don't think it's been there consistently. We kind of talk about, oh yeah, Ayton's been asked to do the dirty work, this and that. I think of rebounding as the dirty work, and I actually don't think he's consistently committed to it. So maybe it's not what he wants to hear of, like, hey, yeah, you're going to get more opportunities, but also can you really commit to rebounding? But maybe that's also a way to kind of reason with him and say, hey, you know, if you want a few more post-ups, if you want a few more of those short roll opportunities, maybe some sets built in that get you the ball, then I really, we're going to, you know, if I'm Monty Williams, I really need you to own the boards every single night. And I think he clearly has the potential and ability to do that. I mean, the version of DA that we've seen battling against, you know, a big guy like Jonas Valanciunas, who is just a nightmare on the glass, or a smaller guy who's a pest like a Nick Batum or something, or dominating in the regular season a lesser player like Christian Wood. Those games, those moments have shown us he can be one of the best rebounders in the entire NBA, and I do think it would go a long way toward the Suns being their best and making up for what might be a thinner or smaller roster than we've even seen the past couple of seasons. That'll wrap us up for today, guys. DeAndre Ayton, three ways he can get better with this new contract on this potentially new-look Suns team. A big thank you for making Locked On Suns your first listen today. The rest of the week, we're looking at Aaron Edwards checking in, as he does every week with us. And then to close out the week, a crossover show with the host, one of the hosts of Locked On Nets, to talk about all things Kevin Durant as we drag it into purgatory. So, keep it right here. Another thank you for making Locked On Suns your first listen. Now go make Locked On NBA your second listen to catch up on all things going on around the league.